Now, if you go to the next slide, there you see just an example of this, of paleontological data. I mean, you have here the different geological layers, and here you have different species which you can find in different layers, and often things are drawn in school books in the way as it is done here, indicating it has all the same origin at the very beginning. If you look only at the data itself, you end up with this drawing, which is exactly the same as on the top, but you do not put in this idea that it had a same beginning. And you see, anyhow, there are many dashed lines here which indicate that the links are not there. And the data itself is simply summarized here. So if you would only look at the data, you would have this, but not this. Okay? Now, on the next one, and we have here a statement of Darwin. Indeed, that is one of those I referred to earlier. The number of intermediate varieties which have formerly existed on Earth should be truly enormous. Why then is not every geological formation and every stratum full of such intermediate links? Geology assuredly does not reveal any such graduated organic chain. And this perhaps is the most obvious and gravest objection which can be argued against my theory. This shows you that Darwin himself was honest on the subject. And that I think we should respect. Now, we are 120 years after Darwin, said David Rope, and the knowledge of fossil record has been greatly expanded. We have a quarter of a million fossil species, but the situation hasn't changed much. The record of evolution is still surprisingly jerky, and ironically, we have even fewer samples of evolutionary transition than we had in Darwin's time. This is simply, you know, of someone who knows what he's speaking about, stating this. Now, if you go to the next one, that is in relation to the transition between, you know, monkeys and human beings. And this is showing you, here's the scale of years, and here you have the years 70, years 80, years 90, and around 2005. In textbooks, you found around the year 70, something like that, where you have here the great apes, and you have clear lines drawn between them, and up there you have the humans, yeah? And they thought everything is understood. Of course, you have here huge time period, which is uncovered. But then as time moved on, when it made more findings, they are indicated here, and you see the lines get more complicated. And then in the years 90, you see that the lines get even shorter, because people realize that the differences between, in particular, these findings and humans and monkeys are just too big. And in the year 2005, more findings are there, but the situation has become so complicated that the lines are even shorter. So it is just one example from a German textbook which shows that as time has moved on, actually the situation has become much more complicated, and it is really shaking evolutionary theory. Next one. So more time, more data, more clarity. The more you know, the more it becomes difficult. And indeed, that we have seen just before. We move further. Still a few words on biogenesis. That is actually another big and important point. This means really the transition from lifeless matter to life. And back in 1962, there was Louis Pasteur, who was actually also a Christian. He demonstrated that the falsity of the theory according to which the life could appear from nothing and microbes spontaneously be generated. He made this experiment where you had here some air with germs, but the solution remained sterile, as long as you were pumping here, it was not possible really to produce any life in there. Next one is explaining the chain, and I don't go into the details here, from this simple molecules you have here, like water or methane, carbon dioxide and so forth. You know, from these simple molecules you can produce amino acids. That is the first step which is needed in order to get to cells. And you have a few, in particular the one where proteins and nucleic acids are produced. Now, in order to get from anorganic to organic, or really from lifeless molecules to life, you have to go through all this chain. Now, on the next one, you see that only the first has been achieved, really. That is, but if you go further, please, that is a famous Miller experiment from 1953, where you have these molecules put together, and indeed one has managed to produce some of the fundamental amino acids. 19 out of 20 could be produced, but with many interventions of the scientists. But besides this intervention, this is only the very first step. In order to really produce proteins, and that is now the next slide, it's a simplified version, you have to build these macromolecules. And these macromolecules, like DNA or proteins, are formed of possibilities of a peptide bond. You see here, these are just an illustration for such molecules, and you see that you have two possibilities here to chain something, and you can make out of these chains like that. And here you have other types of molecules, and you can also make chains like that. But there are many amino acids who have only one peptide bond, as these ones. Now you see immediately, if one of these red ones, like this one, would make a peptide bond with this one, then you can't add anything at the end here. So you can't make macromolecules. And that's actually a fundamental problem. And to get these enormously long chains like you have in proteins or in DNA, the probability for that is really extremely small. And I've given you here some numbers. So the probability to form a short chain of 100 amino acids is just 1 in 1/2 out of 100, which is 1 in 10 to the power of 30. That number doesn't mean much to you, but it just indicates it is extremely unlikely. And even time cannot solve that problem. Now, if you go further, there's something now about really DNA, but we don't go into the details now. I've just one statement I would like to read to you here of Paul Davis. Making a protein simply by injecting energy is rather like exploding a stick of dynamite under a pile of bricks and expecting it to form a house. And that is exactly what you assume in evolutionary theory in order to form out of amino acids proteins or even DNA. And DNA is such a complex thing. We don't go into the details, but on the next slide I show you something, next one, on this. Oh no, something else first. Okay, we should stop soon.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
Good. There are many indications, really, which show us that there's a nice theory, but nothing more than that. In particular, in the field of biology, there are so many things which are told in textbooks, but they are simply not proven. And I have here one example, and maybe we finish with that one. That is the famous bacterial flagellum, and you might have heard about it. There are interesting books on this, like the one with the title Darwin's Black Box. The one or the other might have read it. I recommend it. But this is about, this object which is like a little motor which allows bacteria in our bodies to move. And this motor is just fantastic to see in every cell something like that and put together in a marvelous way, and it works. And this is just one example of what we call irreducible complexity, which means this motor, this flagellum, you need every piece so that it works. If one piece would be missing, the whole thing doesn't work. So natural selection as such doesn't help you to explain how something like that can come into being. And this is just a simple example. There are much more complex ones, like, for example, our eyes. How a human eye or any eye of animals also can be formed, this is a miracle. Now, I have just a short film, which I show you still and then we end, on the molecular, on the bacterial flagellum. You see a cell, the cell wall, and you see here a few details of this flagellum, of this motor, how it's put together. And it exists in every cell, in trillions of types, and you see how they are built. And all the information is in there, in the DNA indeed, so that our bodies and every cell knows how things have to be put together that all this works.
This is a one-cell molecule?
Yes. This is just, you know, just a flagellum which allows bacteria to move. Okay? And here you see how it's put together. And the information is there. And of course that leads to the point, who has put the information there? Mm-hmm. And that leads us always to the point, yes, there's a creator who has put it all together, who has put the information inside the DNA and made sure that everything was possible. But you see, doing research and doing also research in biology, these things were completely unknown to Darwin. He didn't have a clue about this. But as a matter of fact, as people study things, they discover how things look like, how complex it is, and it all works. And I want to finish with that. It can only be because there is a creator. It's our Lord Jesus Christ who has put it all together. And it shows us also something of his greatness. When we look into, we are really confronted with the greatness of the creator. And that should lead us really to worship him.